Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. After multiple delays, the city says it will start enforcing its 60-day shelter limit on March 16th, this Saturday. Less than a week out, there are a lot of questions about how the policy will work. So let's dive deeper into what we know about the upcoming deadline, the resources that people need to get into housing, and what happens after people move out of shelters. I sat down with WBEZ immigration reporter Adriana Cardona-Magigad and Lydia Wong, a volunteer for Shy Welcome. That's a grassroots network that connects migrants to resources. Adriana starts with what we can expect to happen on the deadline this Saturday.
The city has not really shared numbers of people out of like the thousands that were due to leave on February 1st. We don't know exactly how many have actually found apartments. I know that when the city announced that they were going to postpone the deadline, they did say that several hundred, I believe it was some 900 number, were starting to get connected to the process, but they didn't really say like exactly how many. So what to expect? I mean, city officials have said that, you know, people are going to be starting the process all over again. But does it entail that they're going to go back to a police station and then ask for a shelter bed and then like take all their belongings there and then go to a landing zone and then try to get placed in a shelter? I mean, that's what has been said before, but
so many questions.
Yeah.
Still remain. And I'd love to hear from you both on this next one. What are you hearing from people trying to find housing, from the migrant families themselves? You first, Adriana, and then we'll hear from you, Lydia.
People have been so desperate. I mean, I get so many calls. I give out my card just to, like, you know, connect with people. And I obviously keep their contacts when I interview them. And they just keep calling me. They really want to find apartments. Some people really have their hands tied because they just really don't know the city well. They don't have jobs. They don't have a source of income. And not everyone qualifies for the rent assistance that was initially given to many of them.
That's right.
So that's creating, like, a lot of tension on people right now.
What are you hearing, Lydia?
Yeah, everyone is a bit desperate, looking for places. And we know that housing is an issue all over the city, not just for migrants right now, but we have a lack of affordable housing. And so we see people, unfortunately, being steered to apartments that are at prices that they probably shouldn't be at. And so we also have concerns that even for those people who do move out, how long can they afford paying 50, 60% of their income towards rent. So that's significant issues as well.
The other piece here is this deadline. It's been extended so many times, right? So how does that affect the mindset of folks in the shelters? Are they taking this seriously?
There's both this feeling of instability, this idea that the rules can change at any time, whether that's going to be in their favor or against them, there's no idea. So I think there's both people who don't take it seriously, who live on this idea of hope that, you know what, they can't find an apartment anyway, so what are they going to do? All they can do is stay there and hope. And at the same time, creating a lot of anxiety of, who knows, maybe this time they'll be stuck out in the cold, or maybe things will change and it will get worse. There's no telling.
So ahead of Saturday, what do you want to see from the city?
It would be nice to have a plan. It would be great in particular for residents in the Halsted shelter who now are stuck quarantining to have a plan very soon for them. I've got some families who were supposed to be moving out this coming week, and now that is all on hold for them. So we have both this deadline for housing for all of the shelters, but then also this unique subset of people who can't move out now at the moment and now are at jeopardy of losing their incomes and further making it difficult for them to obtain housing.
Let's get some more context here, Adriana. How quickly are people moving out?
So based on my all observations from like the beginning, it seems like people were actually spending months in the shelters, even if they qualify for rent assistance. And a lot of it was coordinating with the case managers, actually finding apartments. Like when people don't have like the credit history, they don't have jobs, they don't know their way around. Even with the assistance, it was extremely hard. And then sometimes when they actually made a connection, then they had to wait for the caseworker and then like try to get that all that set up. And then,
so what's this new fast track option then?
So the fast track, basically people are finding apartments on their own, kind of like not so much with the caseworker and like not maybe having so much red tape in between. So they're going on their own to find apartments. I know this one family, for example, that they were actually qualifying for the assistance, but it was taking so long that they just decided to ask for donations and ask for help. They gathered enough to pay for 2 months of rent, and they moved to a cheap, cheap apartment, a family of seven, somewhere on the south side. Mm-hmm. And so, but they still don't have a job, and they still don't know how to pay for the other extra months.
Oh, wow. How do you feel about the fast track, Lydia?
What it's really doing is outsourcing the work that the city should be doing in helping people receive housing to volunteers and to the migrants themselves. I understand this is a massive undertaking, but we need to scale up services, not keep them at minimum levels. Mm-hmm. And so for Fast Track, we're requiring people to come with lease in hand, like a signed lease from the landlord in hand, in order to be able to get the housing voucher. And that's a lot of work. We have volunteers who just do cold calls to people, who just knock on doors that look like there's apartments being renovated, asking if their space is open. Mm-hmm. But we can't do that at such a massive scale. And so even with Fast Track, it takes a while for people to come through.
Now, as we talk about this massive scale of folks here in the city, there has been a dip, though, Adriana, in the number of people that are in the shelters, right? What's behind that?
Yeah, so we have now like about 11,000, more than 11,000 migrants staying at around 23 active shelters. And that's definitely down from like the 15,000 plus that were staying and like across 39 shelters.
Down, you know, but that's still 11,000 people.
Yeah, and I think like, you know, like the people moving like at a faster pace just because they're desperate has contributed. I also think that a lot less people are coming in. Like before, we had like migrants coming by the bus loads, and there's just been just so many different variables too happening at the border and like other Congress, you know, and the lack of kind of like resolutions there. I know that there's a sense of disillusion that, you know, people are feeling, and maybe the first wave had some sort of like, even though it was also difficult, they had perhaps a little bit more assistance. Mm-hmm. Now it's just becoming so hard, and the situation is so dire that people also tell their family members, and I'm sure that's discouraging other people to make the trek all the way here.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? Now that the shelters aren't maxed out like they were at one point, could the city be more lenient in enforcing this deadline on Saturday?
I mean, you have now 23 active shelters, but you were able to have like 29. And also, there are some shelters that are better equipped than others. Yeah. And you can definitely redistribute people in a way that they're going to be in healthier environments. Like, you know, take people out of the Pilsen shelter. Yeah. It seems like that definitely that warehouse is not in good condition.
What do you think, Lydia?
Yeah, I think that if we look at the logistical nightmare of trying to evict thousands of people and have them reenter the system, it just doesn't make sense. It creates more work and more burden for the city than providing people with the supports that we need. It seems like if we were to provide people with supports while in the shelter, we could significantly increase the chances of people getting into stable housing and creating their own independence. And that's the direction I would love to see the city moving towards.
Now, there is urgency in getting people out of shelter, but not just because of this deadline, but because of the conditions and the close quarters. Most recently, there have been 2 reported cases of measles at the Pilsen shelter. Tell us more about what people are experiencing, Adriana.
You know, in the Pilsen shelter, definitely we've heard just so many horrifying news about the conditions. People are just experiencing not only like illnesses or just being just kind of like cramping there, but the food not being good enough, or like people experiencing like poor treatment in the hands of the staff members. And, you know, that's actually happening based on a set of grievances filed by migrants through a system that's been established for them to do so. Mm-hmm. We're finding out that that's not only just happening in one shelter in Pilsen, but that's happening across many other shelters.
Yeah,
that has happened.
Nearly 250 grievances,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And so 60% of those grievances involve people just complaining about the treatment, the poor treatment that they were experiencing by staff members. Some people were talking about feeling discriminated against, you know, their origin and other things.
Yeah. Well, why don't we hear from a woman that you spoke with?
Dile que ahorita no hay, no hay, pero ni toalla sanitaria. Ahí no hay toalla sanitaria. A mí me vino mi menstruación el hace 8 días.
So this woman, Rosbelli, she's talking about like some shelters don't even have like menstrual pads to give them. sometimes women have also told me that they have like one menstrual pad per day or anything. And when she doesn't have any money, she just uses toilet paper because she really cannot even buy pads for her right now.
My goodness. Does this sound familiar, Lydia? A story like this one?
Yes. Unfortunately, we hear across many shelters, people not having basic hygiene products, people not having diapers, there never being soap in the bathroom, people receiving one or two squares of toilet paper because they have to ask for toilet paper before going to the bathroom. And so it's really just basic items. And this is something that we've brought as volunteers, as complaints to the city for months. We've also requested the city for months to allow for medical screenings at the landing zone. At the current moment, I believe today things are changing because of the crisis. But prior to today, people were going to shelter with no medical screening whatsoever. And so a lot of this is just watching, seeing that something is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you can see a train wreck waiting to happen and nothing is being done to prevent it.
Yeah. As we mentioned, Adriana, nearly 250 grievances filed between June 2023 and January, so just 2 months ago. The majority of the grievances involve, you know, these bad conditions, humiliation you write about in your story. Mm-hmm. I mean, the story of the woman who was just trying to get a cup of milk for her child in the middle of the night, you know, was told to expose her breasts to be able to get that cup of milk. Like, that's ridiculous. Here's a statement from the city, the Office of Emergency Management. It says, quote, "The city does not tolerate discrimination in any form, and grievances of this nature that are found result in corrective action up to and including demobilization from the mission," end quote. And a statement from Favorite Healthcare Staffing says, quote, "Favorite does not tolerate or accept discriminatory or abusive behavior by its staff." Also, it goes on to say that the company requires staff to participate in anti-harassment and de-escalation training. Right, Adriana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they said. Yeah.
This company is based out of state, Lydia. Favorite Staffing, it got the city's biggest contract. How are you and other local community organizers reacting to all of this?
Yeah, we're not fans of Favorite. We would have loved to have seen the contract go to a local company, go to someone else who's got a better track record. I know Favorite has tried to increase some of their local staffing, which is helpful in cutting down with costs, but to have such a large organization come in, and while I'm sure some people mean well, the reality is that for most people, it is a very high-paying job where you can come and make a lot of money. And it's not necessarily for a specific mission or goal. Mm-hmm. And so I think we see that play out in some of the shelters. We see some people who do have some sort of value or ideal, but we see a lot of people who are there because of this huge cash incentive.
Now what, Adriana? I mean, what accountability measures is the city putting in place?
I mean, I think that with all these reports, we're talking about like these grievances. They give us a picture into what life is like inside the shelters, mm-hmm. right? But this has not been the first and only report that comes out of the shelters. And it gives us an idea of how migrants are feeling, like are saying what they're saying about the treatment.
Yeah. And let's keep in mind, this is the ones that are reporting, right?
And these are the ones that are reporting.
There are ones that are not saying
so many
anything.
Exactly. And so we have to keep in mind that there is a lot of power held by the staffers at these shelters. I mean, if you are asking someone for a piece of toilet paper, and you're also your food and security and housing, your shelter depends on being okay with people. I mean, like, there is a lot of abuse of power that can be happening, mm-hmm. and it is happening based on these grievances. If I was spending so much money, like in this particular company, I feel like the city needs to really look into what type of training, because even though they say they're getting some sort of training and that some of those grievances and the process leads to termination, is it really happening? Is it really, you know, based on the accounts by just so many people, whether they are through grievances, news reports, or anecdotal evidence, it doesn't seem to be happening. Yeah. This type of training and preparation of the people who are serving. Yeah.
I mean, my mind is blown.
Let's remember that these grievances have been filed for months. Although we just are able to see the reports of them, the city has known about them. These have been reported months and months mm-hmm. ago.
From at least last summer.
Mm-hmm. And so what we're seeing is a lot of times people don't want to file grievances because what's the use? There's no change. When we're looking at shortages of basic items, the city acknowledged there was a shortage of diapers just maybe a week ago. Mm. And yet we've had these reports for months and months on end. So the knowledge is all there. There's just no will for change.
Give me the list right now, Lydia. What resources do folks need to get out of shelters?
Basic items to live, so that way their minds can be freed to actually focus on the future rather than meeting immediate needs. Would love to see basic ESL programming in shelters. Having a basic knowledge of English advances work prospects, makes it easier to obtain housing, to do the basic things like enrolling people in school or getting medical appointments. Would also love to see better housing counseling. Right now, people who don't have a voucher meet with a caseworker one time 45 days before they're scheduled to leave, and another time 21 days before they're scheduled to leave. That's their schedule, and that's their support for finding housing. Two meetings. And we all know that that is
not realistic. And they're supposed to understand the entire process.
Exactly.
From two meetings.
Yes. So we need a lot of supports. But I think if we're looking at what's going to be the most bang for the buck, I think ESL classes and basic needs is what's going to really help advance people towards stability.
Catch us up. What are the current issues around work permits, Adriana?
Basically, it's extremely hard for people to get a work permit. Not everybody qualifies for the temporary protected status, which allows migrants, mostly from Venezuela and a few other countries, to apply for a work permit and get protection from deportation. Not everyone qualifies for that because there was a cutoff deadline, a cutoff date for that.
Yeah.
And there are some others who may qualify for work permits if they have a humanitarian parole, but like it's extremely hard to get that as well. So even if you go through some sort of like asylum application process, everybody's case is different. It's extremely hard. And the wait periods are also pretty long. Another thing that I forgot to mention is that initially the numbers expected to qualify for work permits was way higher. But now after, city officials in partnership with community organizations and immigration lawyers have done a lot of workshops to get those who qualify, try to get them to get work permits. But that number is extremely, extremely low. Mm. So not that many people. I mean, I have actually people who've contacted me. I have this guy in Indiana who contacted me saying, I need farm workers in my tomato farm. And I gave him a few numbers, like, you know, to for him to start some sort of process. He's like, okay, I couldn't get anything because I need migrants who have work permits. And obviously, those are very rare to come by. Like, seriously, people really don't.
They want to work, but they literally could not. Right?
Exactly.
They did not have the authorization. So this all comes back to a point that Lydia has made that we've discussed many times on the program, a much broader issue, right? This is the lack of affordable housing in this city. What solutions are available to help drive down costs for migrants as well as the city's unhoused population?
I think one of the things that we can't get away from is the need for simply more units and initiatives that are going to develop new units, not just try to fight over the units that are pre-existing, I think are really a key piece of it.
Yeah.
And I think we do see some initiatives on the west side and south side currently in constructing new homes, but would love to see more of that across the city.
What solutions can you think of, Adriana?
Yeah, there's a story I reported on actually last fall, and I profile this really cool initiative about shared housing initiative. So basically this organization on the north side, it's renting out kind of like a loft basically, but they used to have people living there a while back, and they fixed it and they remodeled it a little bit with the help of migrants themselves who said, we want to live here. And they included the migrants, the people in this process. So they took ownership of this particular housing initiative, and they're living in shared living spaces. So that's one thing. And there are like projects out there like being built and developed right now. But when you really look, when you start looking like, oh, I'm going to see if I can find an apartment that I can rent. I mean, like rents are extremely expensive.
Oh, it's tough for everyone right now.
It's tough for everyone.
Trying to find a home.
So it's like, what do we really mean when we say affordable housing and for whom? And like those who are low income and actually have multi-generational families, how are they being able to find this type of affordable homes should be there?
Wow, we'll leave it there for now. We've been talking with WBEZ immigration reporter Adriana Cardona Magigad and Lydia Wong, who's a volunteer for Shy Welcome. Thank you both so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubers, edited by Meha Ahmed. It was mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more perspectives on Chicago's migrant crisis, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and head over to wbez.org/reset. for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.